Hey, good morning, Midcurrent Church. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here at Midcurrent Church. It's great to have you here. We are rolling right along in the second week of just a three-week series that we're calling Guardrails. And this morning, we're going to be talking about the one thing, right? You're going to be so excited that you came. We're going to be talking about the one thing that nobody wants to talk about in church. Right, if this is like the first time you've walked into church in a long time, you're just, you know, hoping that this is not what you talk about in church. If you brought a friend this morning, you're praying, you know, maybe you've never been a praying person in your life, but you're praying, God, please let them not be talking about this in church today. And yes, we're going to be talking about it today, because when we're in this series talking about guardrails, this is simply one place where I think it's helpful for us to have guardrails the most. So we're going to take some time to talk about it this morning, hopefully in a refreshing and in a way that you see how it could really impact your life. And so as I let your imagination wander for a bit, let me just remind you what this series Guardrails is all about. In case you weren't here last week, or if you've never really thought much about what a guardrail is or what it isn't, let me just give you a quick definition here. A guardrail is simply this. It's a system. It's a system. There's some thought, there's some purpose, there's some intention behind it. A guardrail is a system designed to keep your vehicle from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. It's a system designed to keep your vehicle from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. And guardrails, they're designed to do a few things. Guardrails, they're designed to direct, to protect, and to minimize damage. They direct us, they direct your cars, they direct traffic saying, stay over here, right? And then they also protect you from what's over there. And if you should bump up into them, if you should run into a guardrail, they're designed to minimize damage as best as possible. And if you remember from last week, what we talked about, these guardrails on highways and byways across the country, these guardrails, they're placed not in the danger zone. Guardrails aren't placed in the danger zone on the side of a steep cliff. They're not even right on the line. That they're not even right on the line between what is safe and what is dangerous. Right? These guardrails, they're actually placed a few feet inside of the safety zone. That they're actually placed a few feet inside of the area where it is still safe. The placement of these is so smart. Right, it's so smart, but it's also what means that we don't often pay much attention to guardrails as much as we should. Because when we're close to these guardrails, we're still in the safe zone. We think, I'm good, we're good, it's all good. And so we don't pay much attention. Because nobody really needs a guardrail until they do. Nobody really needs a guardrail until they do. And then we're pretty glad that they were there. Sometimes they can make all the difference in the world. And here's the thing. I believe that highways and byways across the country, I believe that highways are not the only place that we need guardrails. And I believe that we need some guardrails in various places in our lives to help us avoid disaster. Avoid mistakes, avoid regrets in some of the areas in your life and my life that matter the most. And that's what this whole series is about. Helping us to avoid regrets, avoid mistakes in some of the areas that are of our life that matter the most. This whole series, it's kind of inspired by what's written in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. This is a guy named Paul. He's known as the Apostle Paul. He was like the first church planter, and he's planting churches. And what he writes in this book of Ephesians, he's writing to churches, to his people in Ephesus, where he started a church. And here's what he writes to his people. He says this in the book of Ephesians chapter 5. Paul writes, be careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, for the days are evil. That's what's inspired this series. Be careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Right? The days, the world, the culture, not only back then, but certainly today, Right? The culture in the world is full of things, full of traps, full of tricks, full of lures that may pull us away from what we know is best for us, or what's most wise for us, or would pull us away from what would contribute to the best version of you and me. So we have to have some kind of plan in place to make the most of those moments, to make the most of those days, to make the most of the opportunities, to make the most of the life that we have. Because most of us don't plan to make moral or relational or financial or career mistakes. It's just that rarely do we plan not to. We don't often plan to wreck our life or to wreck our career or to wreck our reputation. We just don't often plan not to. And so guardrails are how we plan not to. Guardrails are how we avoid, how we attempt to avoid the mistakes and the regrets in some of our areas of our life that matter the most. Really quickly here. Last week, if you missed it, we talked about the need for guardrails when it comes to our friends and our associates, right? That whether we choose them or not, every day, every week, we are surrounded by people, people that we enjoy, people that we love, right? People whose company we like. We're surrounded by people that would either lead us toward or away from the life that we want to be living. Meaning that sometimes it's when we're with our friends and our associates that mean we often need guardrails the most. That's what we talked about, a need for guardrails when it comes to our friends. If you missed it, you can jump on our website and keep up to date with that podcast. But today we are going to be talking about our need for guardrails when it comes to our finances. And hopefully, like I said, we'll talk about this in a refreshing and a helpful and an impactful way for us all. When it comes to our finances, we simply need a plan. We need a system in place. That's what a guardrail is. We simply just need a system to help direct us toward what is best, that would protect us from what ultimately could lead to some really dangerous situations, dangerous ways of living life. And so this morning, I'm hoping to point you in the direction. That's all this is. I'm hoping to point you in the direction of a pretty simple, but a pretty wise plan, a pretty wise system, or a pretty wise set of guardrails. Now, let me just be clear about this before we dive in. I'm no dummy. Okay, I'm fully aware that money or anything related to it, or even just words that start with M, right? They're like number one on the list of don't talk about in church. Whether it's real or whether it's perceived, most people think that the church just wants your money, right? No good church, at least, should be out there just saying, we just want your money, right? That could have been a myth that we could have talked about in our Busted series that we just finished, right? No good church is just out to get your money. Right? Today's is not about what the church wants from you. Let me say that again. Today is not about what the church wants from you. It is truly what this church and what I want for you. I mean, if I could pull back the curtain on my heart so you could see fully where this is coming from, this is truly about what this church and what I want for you and what I want for your life and what I want for your future and what I want for your heart. And so I want to talk about this today, something that I think is really important for us all. I want to talk about it today because I wonder how many of you are a little bit like me. So over the past couple years, I, like so many other people, me and Erica both, we've gotten hooked on the HGTV show Fixer Upper. Anybody else? Okay. If you haven't seen it, there's a couple down in Waco, Texas, that they renovate renovate these rundown houses into their clients' dream homes. And the transformation of these homes is like unbelievable. It's like, man, for that much money, you can do all this stuff. It's your house, and you know, Chip and Joanna, the little Waco couple, they're fun and they're funny. And in my opinion, it's just good. It's clean. It's fun TV entertainment. So I admit we become a huge fan of this show. But the truth is, just talking about this with someone the other day, the truth is, as much as I love this show, and I really do, I really, really do, as much as I love this show, there's something really, really dangerous about it for me. something really dangerous about this show for me. The more that I watch this show about other people's beautiful, brand new houses, the less I like my own house. And that's a problem because I just moved into a great house right here in Hudson. That's more than we deserve. Right, we're so fortunate to have this house that suits our family well, to be in a city and to be in a neighborhood and to have neighbors that we really enjoy. And truthfully, my wife and I, we say it to each other often. We look at each other and we honestly say, man, I love this house. And yet, because of what we know it could look like, we already have this huge list of what's not good enough. Right, we've only been in the house, we haven't even been in the house 7 months, and already we're dreaming about something different than what's currently there. It's like, okay, yeah, we'll do new lights here, those gotta go, we'll replace all the carpet, do hardwood floors everywhere, right? We just talking about the other day about doing a wall of shiplap and putting some built-ins next to our fireplace. I mean, half the time my eyes glaze over, I look at Erica, I'm like, Erica, we should move to Waco, Texas. Right? It's silly, stupid stuff. Neither of us want to move to Waco, Texas. Neither of us know that's going to happen. That's not what either of us really want. And so we just go back to dreaming then about bringing a little bit of the Waco magic right into our very own home. Right? You know what I'm talking about, right? Or I should say, y'all know what I'm talking about, right? I think that so many of us, here's where this is going this morning. I think that so many of us at one level or another, we're all different, I get that, we're in different places. I think at one level or another, we've all developed some kind of appetite for more, for better, for bigger, for nicer, for upgradier. If that's a word, I'll just make it up. Right? Some of it is because of what we see on TV. Right, all right, some of it comes from knowing what others have or what they just bought or where they just went. Sometimes maybe it's just hardwired into us, right? This desire for more stuff, right? Sometimes it's just there. Now, here's the thing. I'm not suggesting that we need to beat ourselves up over this, right? I'm not saying, oh, we're awful. All of us are horrible. I don't want us to beat us up over this. I just need us to be aware of something. I want us to be aware of something when it comes to any kind of appetite. I want us to be aware of something, which is this. An appetite, it's never fully and finally satisfied. You get that? An appetite, it's never fully and it's never finally satisfied. Think about this with food. This is the easiest way to think about this. Think about it with food. We might satisfy our hunger or our appetite for a moment, for a few hours, but when the morning comes back around, when dinner time hits after a long day, right, our appetite returns. Why? Because an appetite, whether it's for food or something totally different, an appetite, it's never fully and it's never finally satisfied. And so if our appetite for more money or more stuff or more house or whatever, if that appetite is never fully and it's never finally satisfied, then we need to be careful, Paul says. We need to be careful. We need some guardrails when it comes to our finances in this part of our life. Some guardrails when it comes to how and what and where we spend. Because an appetite for stuff that's never fully and finally satisfied, it could lead to an exhausting and a very dangerous way of going about life. So we need some guardrails. We need a system that's designed to direct us, to protect us, to minimize damage as best as we can. We need some guardrails. That's what I want to help us create this morning. So this isn't a message about get out of debt, or it's not a message about building godly wealth. There's plenty of programs that deal with all that stuff. Eric and I have done some of them. Dave Ramsey, financial peace stuff, and that was debt free and changed our lives. There's great programs for that, but that's not what this morning is about. This morning isn't dependent on how much or how little you have. In fact, I believe that you could have all the money in the world. I believe that you could be golden financially, and you could still be in a ditch when it comes to what Jesus is talking about, money. Because he gets right to the heart of the matter. And so that's what I want us to take a look at this morning. This is, we're going to look in just a second here. This is Jesus himself speaking in what's considered one of his, most famous teachings. It's his Sermon on the Mount. And he's talking about money and possessions and where we store up things for ourselves. And he goes on in Matthew chapter 6 to say this. This is what I want us to hear this morning. He says this: "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and you'll despise the other." He says no one can have two masters. What's he getting at? We don't really talk about masters today. Right, that's not really the world that we live in. So when we hear the word master, we assume it's like a boss, is it like a manager? What is it? What's a master? But a master, it isn't just a boss or a manager. It's more than that. A master, especially in the world that Jesus is living in, a master is it's someone who owned someone or something. A master was someone who owned someone or something. So to refer to a master, it was referring to ownership. Right, who it is or what it is that owns you, who it is or what it is that you're enslaved to, right, that you serve day in and day out. And Jesus is saying you can't have two masters, you can't serve two masters. So the question is, what are the two masters that he's speaking of? He goes on to say this: you cannot serve both God and money. Cannot serve both God and money. Only one of the two can be your master. He's talking about masters. And as he's talking about masters, what we see is this, that ultimately, if we really think about it, when he's talking about this idea of masters, we see that Jesus isn't ultimately too concerned with our money. He's concerned with our ownership. He's concerned with who it is or what it is that owns us. His concern is of our ownership, our possession. And so when it comes to money, the question isn't, that this is not what the morning about. The question isn't how much do we have, or do you have too much, or do you have more than we should, or do you have more than him or less than her? That's not the question. The question is, do we have ownership of our money, or does it own us? Right, does our appetite for wealth, does our appetite for stuff or for bigger or for more, does our appetite for all that actually call the shots in our life? That's the question. And I think all we have to do to get a glimpse into that in our own life is to look at how the majority of us, this is not everybody, but this is how the majority of us organize and prioritize our finances every day. And this is how most of us do it, because we do it just without thinking. This is just what happens when we go about life. We don't have to think about it, and we naturally just start to organize our financial life like this. We live, and then we save, and then we give. We live, save, give. It seems logical, right? We got to pay the bills. We got to keep food on the table. We got to, keep gas in the car. We got to keep the kids in school, keep the kids playing sports. And we got to save. That's just smart, right? We're being wise here. We tuck away some money for the kids' college or for retirement. And then we put a little bit away, maybe for vacation, some time away. And then with whatever's left over, then we give, right? Maybe there's an earthquake. Maybe there's a tsunami. Maybe there's a GoFundMe for a family that we really, really, really care about. We give if we have something left over, right? So we spend on ourselves now, we spend on ourselves later, and then if there's anything left over, we give. Me first, me second, others third, if there's anything left over. This is the scenario that I think Jesus is alluding to, that he's warning against. And again, he's not concerned with your money. He's concerned with you and with me. He's not concerned about how much we have. He's not concerned about how successful we've been or how wealthy we have or haven't become. He's concerned with who owns us. He's concerned with what it is that owns us. He's concerned with who it is or what it is that is our master. Because when our life is patterned by this live, save, give, we are mastered by our money. We've become enslaved to our money and our appetite for stuff. Our money tells us what to do. We have bills that need to be paid. Tells us what upgrade keeps us up to date. Tells us what update keeps us in style. Tells us what kitchen redo means that our house is ready for resale. And so we jump on this treadmill, and it never stops. Because an appetite, it's never fully, and it's never finally satisfied. And so our money will always be pointing in some new direction that we're forced or just tempted to follow. And it never stops. And this is what can be so dangerous. But what's really at stake? What is so dangerous? Let me just remind you, Jesus isn't saying, hey, you're going to go broke, or, you know, hey, bankruptcy is right around the corner. Or he's not saying, you know, hey, debt's going to overwhelm you. All that's possible. It's very possible. But that's not what he's getting at here. He's saying, hey, if this is the pattern of your living, me first, me second, others maybe third. He's saying, if this is the pattern of your living, you're going to be mastered by something else. You're going to be mastered by your own money. It will own you. And you will be enslaved to your own money. Your money will tell you where it goes, rather than you telling your money where it goes and when it goes. And this, for many reasons, it can just be a dangerous way to live. This type of living could be to lead to some really costly or some really hurtful financial or even spiritual mistakes in your life. When your money tells you where it goes, rather than when you tell your money where it goes. So what do we do? What is it that we actually need? You probably got to guess at what I'm going to say. We need some guardrails. We need some guardrails when it comes to our financial and our material life. We need something in place that would direct us. We need something in place that would protect us from ending up in some kind of unexpected ditch. And we need something in place to help minimize damage in our life or in our family's life or maybe most importantly in our hearts. Right, this isn't the popular thing to talk about, I know, but our finances simply are a thing in the life of the average American. They simply are a place that we need some guardrails. And so no matter how much we make, no matter how financially savvy we are, I want us to get a handle on some guardrails. And so to do so, let me just turn back to what Jesus is teaching and see what we can learn from what he has to say here. He goes on to say this. You can take a look in the side screens. He says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life or what you'll eat or drink or about your body, what you will wear. He says, is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they are? He goes on to say this, and why do you worry about your clothes? See the flowers of the field. They don't. They do not labor or spin. He's saying they don't worry. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon, who was an extravagant man, he says, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you? And then Jesus says, you of little faith. He says, so don't worry, saying, well, you know, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what should we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows. He knows that you need them. Okay? This is a lot of words. This is a lot of little, you know, cute little pictures and analogies to say that God knows what you need. And he'll take care of you. Right? It's saying, hey, he's taking care of the birds and the flowers in the field. Certainly, he'll take care of you. And then he says this. This is where we start to see some guardrails coming into place. He says this, but, or instead, don't worry. God knows what you need. But instead, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well. He says, seek first, put first. Or that's what this is saying. To seek first is to put first or to make first, to make your first priority what? God's kingdom. God's kingdom. It's a kingdom, right? This is where this gets tricky. We don't really talk about kingdoms today, right? Other than my daughter's fascination with Disney princesses in the Frozen Kingdom of Arendelle, we don't really talk a lot about kingdoms today, and I'm guessing that you don't talk about kingdoms in your life either. So what's the deal? What's a kingdom all about? What's God's kingdom? And what's it all about? God's kingdom, here's what it is. God's kingdom is just a way to refer to how life goes under God's watch, under God's rule. It's how life was meant to be ordered for God's people. And there's something that we need to know about God's kingdom. That God's kingdom, it is, it always was, and it always will be an others first kingdom. God's kingdom is an others first kingdom. It's a kingdom, it's an order, it's a way of life that's made possible not by what we have done for ourselves, but by what was done for us, right? For others. Kingdom, God's kingdom is defined by others first thinking. Right, think about the most famous verse in the Bible. It's John 3:16, right? You may know it. Fill in the blank for me here. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. He gave. His kingdom is an others first kingdom. Jesus' life was sacrificed not for his gain, not for God's gain, but for our gain. God's kingdom, the very thing that Jesus is teaching us to put first or to seek first, it's an others first kingdom. So what does that mean then? What does that mean for us? It means that the script is flipped for the way that we pattern our life when it comes to so many things, but when it comes to our money and our stuff and our appetite for more. Our normal mode, don't have to think about it, didn't make a plan for it, it just happened. Our normal mode is live, save, give. Me first, and then me second, and then others third. Me now, me also later, and then others if there's anything left. And when that's the case, let me just remind you, money is our master. The thing that owns us, and we get pushed and we get pulled in all sorts of different directions, often without even realizing it. But if we seek first, or if we put first, or if we make the first things, if we make the first things in our life the things about an other's first kingdom, then we're not mastered by our money anymore. If we seek first an others first kingdom, if that's the kind of mentality we have, we're not mastered by our money anymore. And so rather than live, save, give, that's how it happens for most of us. Without even thinking, it just goes boom, that's what makes sense. Live, save, give. But rather than live, save, give, all of a sudden there's a new order. There's a guardrail. There's a system in place for our financial and for our material and even for our spiritual life. And so when we seek first God's kingdom and others' first kingdom, then we give and then we save and then we live. We give, save, live. We give first, we save for tomorrow second, and we live on the rest now. Others first, wise planning for tomorrow, for emergencies, for the unexpected second, and then we live on the rest now. Trusting, which is easier for some than others, I get that, we're all in different places. We live on the rest now, trusting that we will have what we need. We give, and then we save, and we live on the rest. This isn't listed somewhere in the Bible like that. That's not a Bible verse that says, give, save, live. Jesus didn't prescribe this in this little list form for us. But if we take into account everything that Jesus is getting at, when we consider his warning that if we're not careful, money would be our master, when we take into consideration what he's pointing us to, suggesting for us, we start to see what guardrail protects us from this trap, from this treadmill that never stops. We give, and then we save, and then we live on the rest. And we hold on to the belief that God, right, no matter what we believe about God right now, which is different for all of us, we hold on to the belief, or maybe we just grab a hold of, or we take a chance on the belief that God knows what we need, and that he'd make sure that we have it. Which, by the way, I mean, this just a little aside here, that can be an incredibly faith-building moment. I mean, if you're in a place in your life, you're saying, God, I need my faith to increase. I need a faith-building moment. And putting this kind of plan, this kind of guardrail into place can be that, right? To trust God with what you have and to see him provide for you in the moment. It gives you a front row seat to say, wow, God was there. It can be an incredibly faith-building moment. And I think then this list, this script, flipping this script, it could be the guardrail that helps us avoid being in a ditch, right? We have to work ahead of time to put a plan into place. And then, here's how a guardrail helps. And then, when we start to notice for a time or for a season, for a moment that we've moved outside of or we've moved away from that plan, when we realize that this blueprint is maybe shifting a little bit out of order, when things are getting a little turned around or flipped upside down, an alert should go off, an alarm should go off. It should say, hey, heads up, right? You're still safe. You're still in the safe zone. No damage has been done, no harm, no foul yet. But it should say, hey, you're getting close to the edge. You're getting close to disaster, maybe. And disaster, it may not be dead, it may not be bankruptcy, but it very well may be the reality that you're being mastered by your own money, playing a game that you cannot win, and chasing after something that you'll never, ever catch. Just when you get close, it'll go another 50 yards down the line. So here's the thing, you know yourself. You know your mentality, right? You know you way better than I know you. You know your approach and you know your attitude toward money, toward this whole deal. So let me just ask you the question, where could this guardrail be helpful for you? Where could it be freeing for you? To not be, you know, pushed and pulled and told which direction to go. Where could it be fun? Let me just actually say this really quick. Others first living, it can be a lot of fun. Erica and I, my wife, we're budget people. Yeah, I said that with Dave Ramsey, you know, make a budget. And so we make a budget every month, a pretty specific budget for where our money goes. And for a season, I don't know why we stopped. We were just saying the other day we should start doing this again. But there was a season where we built into our budget, we put it into the plan from the beginning, some money for some, you know, just like spontaneous giving. It didn't replace, you know, our giving elsewhere. Giving to our church has been and always is first and foremost for us and some other organizations that we support. And we didn't change that, but we built right into our budget some extra cash for spontaneous giving. And so we'd go around with our radar up, you know, for when and where we could pull out this kind of money and help someone else. We carried it around so when the moment is right, we were ready. And I'll never forget one of the most fun times we put this into play. We were just finishing up dinner at a restaurant, and we saw come in through the front door a young couple that we had just befriended. We were trying to invest in their life, and they sat down, and instantly Eric and I looked at each other and we said, "This is it. We should use our spontaneous giving money to pay for their dinner." And the answer was absolutely yes, we should. And so we were finishing up. We grabbed our waitress. We said, "Hey, would you use this to help pay for their bill?" And we finished up our dinner and we snuck out. It's fun. It's just fun to do. All right, building an others first mentality. It was just fun. So where could this guardrail, where could this way of thinking even create a little fun in your own life? Where could it, this mentality, where could you make a difference? Where could this approach, where could this mentality impact people around you? Where could you or where might you be the answer to the prayers or to the needs of people or places around you, right? To those of us at Mid-Current Church who call this place home, we could do, right, as a church, we could do some serious damage. And by that, I mean we could do some serious good. We could do some serious good in the community around us, in the world around us, if this was our mentality, right? If those of us who called Mid-Current Church home had an others first mentality, right? As individuals, as families, as a church, we could do some serious good, and the sky is the limit for the impact that we could have around us. And sometimes I just salivate at the thought of that. At the thought of the impact that we could have here in this community, in this region, and in this world. We cannot serve both God and money. Both cannot be our master. And I, for one, I do not want to be mastered by my money. I don't want to be told by my money where to go or what to do or what to upgrade next. I do not want to be mastered by my money, and I hope the same would be true for you. No matter where you are at financially, no matter where you're at spiritually, I hope the same would be true for you. So then let's give it a shot. Let's be people who put God's kingdom, or let's be people who put an others first kingdom first. Let's set up an others first mentality in our life. And discover the freedom, right? Freedom from being told what to do or where to go next. Let's discover the freedom and the joy and the fun and the wisdom, maybe even in others first living. So let's learn to give and then save and then live on the rest. And when those get out of order, let's pay attention. That's what a guardrail's for. When those get out of order, let's pay attention. Let's pay attention to what's happening around us. Maybe more importantly, we pay attention to what's happening in our own hearts. Let's be others first people, and let's set up some guardrails in our life to help us do just that. Let me pray for us. God, thanks again for a chance to be here this morning. Thanks for this series, God, where we've started talking about friends and associates and people around us, and now even a little dicier, God, we start talking about our money and our finances. God, thanks for the opportunity and for the place to talk about some of this stuff in a safe place. God, I pray that you would be working on our hearts to know how it is or where it is that we need to put some of these guardrails into play in our lives. God, it's different for us all, absolutely. We're all walking in here from different ways of life, different situations. God, this is undoubtedly different for all of us. God, I just pray that you would help us to know, that you would be clear with us, or God, that maybe you would highlight it in our life, or just, compassionately as you do, God, shine a spotlight in our life on the area where maybe this guardrail could be most helpful for us. God, this isn't about how much we make or any of that. I hope that you would continue to remind us of that, God, with reminders of your grace and mercy for us, God. This is about our hearts, and we want our hearts to be positioned. We want our hearts to be seeking you first and foremost, God. So would you help us to do that? Again, God, as only you can do, God, would you direct us? Would you be our guide? Would you highlight for us, God, maybe what isn't right? And with your grace and your mercy and your compassion for us, God, would you help point us in the right direction? God, and I just pray that if this became our mentality, more as individuals and as families and even as friends, God, as a church, I pray that the impact would just have a ripple effect on out from this place and the world around us and the people around us and families around us and communities around us and schools around us, God, and the world around us would be impacted in ways beyond our imagination. God, would you help us to do that? We pray all these things in your name. Amen.